Blog Talk Radio.
I've been holding on to a secret, the deep, dark kind that you keep inside. All my life I've been so mixed up, tried to run, but I just can't hide. Every day when I look in the mirror, I can't believe all the faces I see. I feel stained and I feel dirty, but soap and water never washed me clean. No, this is not my imagination. No, this is not just a very bad dream. What you hear is a true confession of a deep, dark secret that's been haunting me. Sometimes it's too hard to remember. Over memory is killing me. How could someone say they love you and take away the child in me? Every day when I look in the mirror, I can't believe that it's happened to me. I've been hurt and I feel cheated. Finally set me free. No, this is not my imagination. No, this is not just a very bad dream. What you hear is a true confession of a deep, dark secret that's been haunting me. Your imagination. No, this is not just a very bad dream. What you have is a true confession that the deep, dark secret, that the deep, dark secret set you free. Set you free.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Fire Talk. This is your host, David Little Eagle, and I'm here with my co-host and producer, Neil Cole. In the world of survivors, there is a crime that is continuously perpetrated against those who have suffered at the hands of others. There are many forms of abuse, and they all carry ugly faces on one big head. Whether it be sexual, physical, emotional, mental abuse, any abuse is a crime. And the crime that is perpetuated even after the fact is when the victims are blamed for what happened to them. Tonight is a very, very powerful show. And for all those who are listening, you know, there will be a message for you, whether you have been a victim of abuse or not. But this goes out to all those who perhaps have suffered abuse in any of its forms. And I hope and I pray that the message will be clear to you. It is not your fault. And, you know, those who isolate and continue to punish the victims of abuse need to understand something. It is not the victim's fault. on the show tonight, we have two extraordinary guests. And it is with great honor and great pleasure that I introduce, again, our friend Annie O'Sullivan, author of Can You Hear Me Now? And Can You Hear Me Now? Part 2. And she is currently working on the third book of this awesome trilogy coming up soon. And it's going to be a really, really powerful, powerful addition to the work she's already done. And on the show, we also have Terry Crane Gray Eyes, a strong advocate for the little warriors, the little ones who experience such horrible things. And it is a great honor to have you both on the show. Welcome, Annie. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you.
Hi, David.
Hi. How are you? How are you?
Yeah. It's so good to have both you ladies on here. And that was an excellent introduction, by the way, David. Thank you for that. We have a lot to cover, so I'd love to get started. And I was wondering, Annie, did you have a chance to write anything?
I did.
That you were going to read? Fantastic.
I did.
Would you mind reading that? And that'll give us a great foundation for where we're heading.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I was taught that they who represent... I'm sorry, I'm going to start over.
Okay.
That's fun.
I was taught that they, who represent every living thing in the universe, will look at me funny. They know that I am bad. They know that I am guilty and dirty, guilty of some unspeakable crime called it. They will see me as broken, to be cast aside as suspect from the good people who live in the light, the good people that God loved while I was in the shadows, having to do it with grown-ups. I would struggle through life making mistakes that good people never make because no one showed me the way. I don't deserve to be successful. I don't deserve to be loved. I don't deserve anything because I stand for the dark shadows of life. I stand for that unspeakable it. Not true. The truth is, I think people who don't want to hear it are part of the problem. It isn't hearing about it that should offend them. It's the fact that it happens, is happening, and will continue to happen that is offensive. Not you, not me, no easy answer, and I know that. But I will keep putting it out there. I hear from so many people who hide themselves because of the social pressure. While a survivor cries in pain and hides, the guilty go on happily to the next victim, and it's just wrong. Statistics tell us that some child that you know right now is living through this dream. Can you say that you know a single child right now that you would turn away from and believe that they created their own hell? Please don't abandon your adult friend who may one day need a shoulder to cry on and a friendly ear to listen. They lived it for years. You can probably survive a few moments of supportive listening.
Excellent. Oh, that has so many layers on it. It just gets you every which way. Oh,
yeah,
man.
It does. Oh. Yes. Thank you for sharing, Annie.
Absolutely. And
thanks for letting me read it.
Oh, man. Actually, that's the whole reason that the show exists, is that you wrote something very close to that. And I read it, and I just was like, it has to be out there. I'm so tired of victims being treated like they did something wrong when they had no power to stop it. It's us as a society that should put something in place to protect the children, not something where we're bashing the children when they're grown. It's just not acceptable in any way, shape, or form. So once I saw it, I had to get it on the air, because your voice is a very powerful one. Yeah.
You know, Annie, you never fail to knock me off my feet. I'm telling you, you are one extraordinary human being. And you know, just as a parenthesis to this whole thing, you know, it's not just the children, but if you think about all the adults as well, who suffer vicious, heinous crimes, and then when when there's a trial held, the victim is the one who's put on trial. And essentially, that's what this show is about. You know, children who have been through heinous crimes, and I'm not even going to call it abuse. These are heinous crimes. They're put on trial by society, and it is just wrong.
Well, it is. That is so true, David. It makes me crazy because, you know, a lot of kids that are abused don't get to go to trial because they're not good on the witness stand. They just tear them apart, and that is so wrong because now they've been violated twice, and they grow up. They grow well. The first half of that is really about how an adult feels when they get there. You've got years and years of just having it piled onto you that somehow this has to be your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they want.
And can I jump?
Yeah, definitely, Terry. This is
perfect. Can I jump in there?
Yeah.
Speaking about that, I have a daughter, and at 12 years old, she told me that my late father-in-law abused her. And when it all was investigated, it was the four oldest grandchildren. So we went through 6 years of court. And after all that came done, we went through court, my daughter told me, if I had to do it all over again, Mom, I wouldn't have told. And I said,
isn't that awful?
But you did the right thing. Yeah, I told her, but you did the right thing. And she said, yeah, but my daddy's gone now. And what happened is my late husband ended up having a heart attack that same year that my father-in-law, 2 years after he was sentenced, actually. And so he died, at 42. So my daughter sees that as if we hadn't gone to court, he wouldn't have lived through all that stress. Because while court was going on, her own aunts and uncles, all her close relatives that we were close with on the reserve, all shunned us. My late husband was run off the road coming home from work one day. Now, we had to be escorted into court. This was a man that served on chief and counsel at one time in his life, so he was well-respected in people. When I was close friends with his sister, and I phoned to tell her what my daughter told me, thinking that, you know, I took this lady as like a mother figure, and she tells me, what are you trying to do, kill my brother? I couldn't believe it.
Oh,
I said, no, your brother has been bothering the grandkids, and she just hung up on me. And then that pretty much set the tone for the next 6 years. So it was tough, and my girl's still alive, you know, but now, the good thing is she does work with children and is an advocate like me and speaks mm-hmm. out against it. And, you know, we didn't see her cousins for 6 years, and then her dad passed away. And so by then she's 18 years old, and her cousins are asking her, where were you all this time? Because my kids went off reserve to school, and these kids went on reserve. And she told them, I never went anywhere. I was at home. And they said, well, how come we never saw you anymore? And then she said, didn't you know that Muslim was charged with 4 counts of sexual assault and 1 uninvited touching? And they're like, what are you talking about? None of them knew. And then my daughter told all her cousins what happened. She said, Mom, I'm telling everybody. And I said, good for you, because we taught her, you lay the shame and the blame where it belongs, and that's on the perpetrator. My daughter did not do anything wrong to deserve that. I did not bring my children into this world to be abused by anybody.
Oh.
And so
exactly.
That's... Go ahead, jump in whenever.
Well, before we go back to that, can you tell a little bit more about your history so everybody gets a...
So I come from... Myself,
yes.
I come from, I went to Indian residential school. I went there for a year. I went in when I was 4 and I came out when I was 5. I was also sexually abused. And so my parents also went to Indian residential school, as did their parents went to Indian residential school, and so did their parents. So I come from 3 generations, and they're... what went on in my family is my dad, when we got out of boarding school, my dad went on to bother my sisters. And
when I was seven, my mom, when we had just gotten out of boarding school a couple of years later, my mom, my big sister at 16 told my mom what my dad was doing. And my mom kicked my dad out in the next, like, that same day. And so I never, ever saw my dad again until my mom passed away when I was 18. And because my mom showed me, you know, little did I know, you know, 20 years later that the same thing would happen to me with my own daughter. When my daughter told me that day, Muslim's been bothering me, it was like a slap in my face. And I just grabbed her and I said, you did the right thing. And I told her I was going to tell her dad, and that's who she was most afraid of, to tell her dad, because, you know, her dad was bigger than life out here. He was a big biker and whatnot. And thank God, you know, he was, because that's one of the lowest forms of crime, you know, that you can commit on a child for a biker. They're strictly against that. So for him to be told that his dad was bothering my daughter, none of these people on this reserve wanted to even, you know, it's pretty much you don't talk about it out here. And me, I talk about it to everybody, and it's almost like people told me in town, how could you talk so openly about that? How could I not? I have nothing to hide.
Exactly.
And I'm well-spoken. I work with children. I love working with children. And I've worked in many places, and even our own employers, they're afraid to speak about this. You tell them, and they don't. Nobody wants to jump on nobody's, to speak about it. Nobody out here, when you speak about what's going on in the family to someone in higher authority, they don't want to bother telling anybody else they're related.
Right.
And they just kind of slip it under the rug, right?
Oh, definitely.
Well, you know, we opened the show with a deep dark secret. That song is again what the show's all about, Terry, and kudos to your daughter, and kudos to you. And you know what? And another hero here is Annie. You know, this is the reason why the survivors have deep, dark secrets is because they're not allowed to express their pain, and they're not allowed to express their sorrow, and they're not allowed to tell the story of what was perpetrated against them. That's why it's a deep, dark secret, and again, that's wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
But even in court, they put my daughter on the stand for 3.5 hours. She was 12 years old, for goodness sakes. She was 14. It went to court every year. I mean, she was out there on the stand. I could not believe what they did to her.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to make it look like she was...
Yeah. Go ahead, Annie.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't sure you could hear me. I got a snowstorm going. They put it out there like as if she did something to bring this on herself, didn't they?
Yes, exactly.
I saw them do that to a 7-year-old child about 4 years ago. 7 years old. It was horrible. That kid probably needed more therapy after she went to court. It just shouldn't
You're
be allowed.
Right.
Yeah.
Not only that, me and my husband weren't even allowed in court with her. My daughter went in there all by herself.
Oh, my God.
You're kidding. Why? Did they say?
And my father-in-law, get this, because in Canadian court, they looked back in the records to see if somebody similar that this had happened to and see what they got in their court case. So that's what my father-in-law got, 2 years, less a day, house arrest. And so after court was over, my daughter's saying, Mommy, does that mean Muslim will be in his house all the time? And me and my husband are like, yeah. And then that's what we thought. Guess what his house arrest was? I could not believe it. We take my daughter at that time, by then we were driving her to school every day in the town. And we would pass my father-in-law. Here he was allowed out from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. The rest of the time he had to be in his house.
You're in Canada, is that what you said?
Pardon me?
Terry, you're in Canada?
Yes.
Because is it true that, because I thought that Canada had a sexual offenders list, and I found
that's true.
It doesn't really exist.
He's so behind, like he had to submit his DNA to the pedophile, you know, where they submit for pedophiles, and they're so behind in Canada that they don't get entered into the system maybe 4 to 6 months after.
Well, I got a list from somebody in government there a few months ago, and I just recently found out if you go there, it doesn't even exist anymore. There's no list.
Mm. I believe that. I believe that.
It's really
upsetting. Nobody even watched. Nobody even cared, and then still kids were with my father-in-law, little kids. The other, my own husband's family still continued to let their kids be with this man. And leave that old man alone with these kids. And now it's both of them are gone. My husband's gone, and so is my father-in-law. And all these kids are acting out. And then it comes out, they're telling my daughter, Tova, you know, Muslim bothered me, and nobody, the cops didn't ask. You know what? We forgot. They asked us what girls were around my father-in-law. We totally forgot that there were two little boys there, too.
Right.
But here they were bothered, too. One went on to do a drive-by shooting, another an armed robbery. One's in jail. Mm-hmm. He won't get out now for another 10 years. And, well, he's in jail. That's what he tells my daughter. Muslim bothered me, and nobody asked me. Nobody told me. Like, nobody even acknowledged what happened to him.
Yeah, that's
and he continued living with my father-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just makes me crazy. They don't ask. These kids go out and start getting in some really major, serious trouble, and nobody stops to say why.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
why are
what
they
I'm
so
hearing,
angry?
Yeah, what I'm hearing most of the time is if they would look into it, they're going to find out these kids were abused. They were molested, and it just messes your head up so bad. And you have all this anger that you don't know what to do with, so you take it somewhere else.
Right.
You're right. Yeah.
Not to mention boundaries that you don't have. And
right, exactly. Annie and Terry, and you're both survivors too. I mean, you're both first generation survivors of your own experiences of crimes, and and maybe I think it's a good point to segue into asking both of you. What your experiences have been after all the stuff you've suffered, after all the things you've been through, what has it been like for you? And either one of you can take a turn right now, Annie, if you want to start first, and Terry can join, or vice, you know. What's it been like for you, my friend?
You know, Terry, this is kind of a jump in there kind of a show.
I see that.
I could go first if nobody minds.
No, that's fine.
That's fine.
Because I actually had quite a conversation with Mel the other night that got me thinking about. Well, one of the things that we had talked about is since I've written my book, I have a fairly good friend who said to me, I would really like to read your book, but I'm afraid that I might look at you differently afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to think about that because my knee-jerk reaction is that's really insulting. Because how else are you going to see me? I mean, are you going to see me as a bad person after this?
Right.
And that's really kind of what I thought. And then it took me a couple of days, and I went back and I asked her, and she said, "Oh no, no." She says, "I just don't want to know." She says, "I think it will hurt to know that those things happened to you." But after I thought about it a couple of more days, she has lived. She's somebody who's lived a really good life. You know, she came from a really good family. She didn't have any problems. You know, bad things just didn't happen to her, and she does sometimes think she's a little superior to people. And I've had enough experience with that even after this, after I've written the book, after I've had all this therapy, I felt guilty. like I was not as good as her, and I had to do a whole bunch of self-talk, and I would hazard to say that it doesn't matter how far you come with a background like mine, you just always have to fight that off and talk yourself out of it, and that's sad, you know. And I'm today I'm feeling really good and I'm healthy and I can be mad about it, but. Do you know what I mean? I don't want anybody to think I'm sitting back here feeling sorry for myself because that happened, but, you know, there's always that little, oh, I'm going to make somebody feel ugly and dirty.
Actually,
and maybe I don't want to inflict
stop
them.
Right there. That one statement right there that you just made is what I see so much in all the survivors, where they immediately, once they start opening it up, start apologizing for it and start like I'm not trying to be whining, I'm not trying to, and you start ripping back everything that you just accomplished and when you said you're already apologizing as you're speaking, even when you're speaking about not apologizing. Apologize.
it's true and it's when you know that you do it, it's well, I don't even know how to tell you. It's annoying. It's annoying to annoy your own self with things that you can't seem to get rid of. You know it's wrong, and you do it anyway.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know, and I saw you do it, and that's because society just makes you feel so much less than with their arrogance and their condescending tones and all, and they have no clue. They couldn't live a second of what y'all lived. They would crumble, and so they have no clue the strength that's within both of you and what it takes to survive at the level that y'all both had to fight. Y'all have a strength that they wouldn't even be able to comprehend or recognize. So,
we teach that guilt to our kids.
Yeah.
My children are all grown, and they all have guilt issues.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Which we
it's
just
not
their
to own. It's not yours to own either.
Well, we had a show with Dr. Nadine Vaughn Williams regarding transgenerational or intergenerational PTSD and the guilt that goes from generation to generation to generation of unhealed spirit that stems from crimes perpetrated on the original source, whether it be a grandparent, a parent, a sibling. Now, here's a disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen. None of us here are PhDs. We're not psychologists. We're not psychiatrists. And
right.
For one, I'm glad I'm not crazy enough to be a psychiatrist. We're not here to diagnose. We are not here to prescribe. But what this is a telling of experiential things that have been experienced, things that these extraordinary women have been through. So we're not
right.
here to diagnose, and just wanted to get that out there. But, you know, we're all here to give voice to two extraordinary women who are probably speaking for many of you who are listening to the show right now. So with that being said, let's continue. Terry, tell us about yourself and what it's been like for you.
Well, I went on to have, I got married, then I went on to have my three girls, and I think my biggest fear was to have girls, and that's because I was bothered in residential school by a girl, and lo and behold, I have three. So I ended up going into counseling because I started having flashbacks of residential school and what happened to me. And then as I got older, I went on to college and I still had my babies. And I had to do a term paper. So on my term paper, I started coming to terms with what had happened to me. So I wrote a paper about the three in my family of what sexual abuse did to us. And so the story was about myself. My brother bothered me and other people, and I dealt with it the story was about the how we dealt with it, the three people dealt with it. I dealt with it by forgiving my brother, but you can't forgive somebody if you're not on that spiritual level. I don't know if you understand what I'm talking about.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's what I did, because I chose to not live with that anger in my life anymore, and I was very angry. And then my daughter dealt with it with her Muslim by taking it to court. And, you know, the flip side to that was she ended up getting into crack. She is straight now, and she has been for 3 years, but that's what happened, right? That's where her anger went into. And then my late sister was abused by my dad, and she ended up doing heroin, and she died of a heroin overdose. And, you know, you can take all sorts of counseling, and but it's really up to the individual, and that's what I found on my learning path. So I grew up not trusting, and I grew up not trusting men or women. And Annie, put that mistrust onto my own kids. And what happened was I didn't want anybody to babysit my kids. I only allowed my own sisters to babysit my kids, and my kids knew never to go around Uncle Jim. My kids knew always never to go near Uncle Jim. They weren't allowed to touch him. I'm not kidding. And I only let my in-laws babysit my kids. And, you know, it's funny because years later I went on to be a facilitator for Little Warriors, which I facilitate, and it's a child sexual abuse prevention program. So we teach parents and caregivers and social workers and police the signs of sexual abuse and how to spot it and what to say when your child discloses that. But it took me a long time to get there, and I lost my train of thought. But I get angry with people about trying to always, when I tell my story to people, they always think that I'm supposed to hide this, and I'm not going to hide it. I always tell them, well, what about the children? Well, you know, you don't want to say that to so-and-so. I said, well, no, I think there's something going on here, but nobody wants to talk about it. And everybody wants you to, it's like we're supposed to be ashamed of what happened to us. I'm not ashamed of what, I never asked for this to happen to me. And it took me a long time to get my training, like my thought process now. But if it wasn't for my mom charging my dad, when my daughter told me, I might have turned, you know, the other cheek too and not wanted to speak about it. But I knew I had to do something for my daughter immediately. So, it's taken me a long time.
Understandably, now this is for all three of you extraordinary women. Mel, I want you to jump in too. The question I have is why does society do that to the victim warriors? Why are the survivors told, don't tell your story? Now, there is no clear-cut answer. There's no black and white here. This is a pretty gray area. But I'd like to know, in your observations, Mel, Annie, and Terry, and maybe I'll jump in here and again, but why? Why do you think society re-victimizes the survivors by telling them, don't talk about it?
I have a theory. And I bet Terry will agree with me from after hearing what she had to say, but you know it's because you know it's not the ugly creepy guy walking down the street. It's your brother, your uncle, your dad, your grandpa. These are people that you have looked up to and you love, and someone is saying something bad about them, and it's shattering their belief. So they want to be mad at you. You took that away from them.
Exactly. And then when you are going after someone who did something, you need to be very well aware of who that person's place is in the family, because the higher up they are in the family, the harder it is for people to accept your truth, because they have so much invested. Like when I called everybody about my father, because I wanted all the children in the family, all the parents to know, they turned on me, and they were telling me that I've never seen anything like that. That doesn't happen. Why are you saying stuff like that? And the isolation process began where it was way easier. I was way more expendable than the father figure of the family that everybody looked up to. So the truth was irrelevant. It was the power position of who the players were. That's the relevance. So he wasn't going anywhere. He could have killed everybody in the house, but a couple, and those two would have still been right there going like, well, okay, we know you were a little angry, but we forgive you. When your identity is invested in that one thing being true, you will not be able to see the truth of what's there.
They want to believe like the movies, that it's some ugly, creepy guy with a third eye, you know. That's who's molesting your children.
And when we teach our children who to watch out for, we don't spend enough time telling them about family members or any time telling them about family members. You know, stranger danger, all those kind of things. It's like most things happen by people that you love or you know pretty well. There wasn't anybody outside of my family really bothering me to the degree that the people right in my home were the ones that were danger to me. And that's the thing that needs to be spoken. What does a child do when somebody that's in their home is targeting them? And that's where we fail the children.
I came upon a very disturbing headline, and I didn't get to read the entire article because I honestly didn't want to deal with installing a new app on Facebook, which is a pain in the ass anyway. In and of itself, Facebook is a pain in the ass, and yeah, I'm saying that. But the headline was, and ladies, are you ready for this? A mother is arrested for sexually assaulting her infant son. So the monsters are up. Did you come upon that? It appears that the monsters take both forms. It's scary.
It was sent to me, and
it was.
I didn't read it either. I didn't have to read it to know what it was about. And it really did bother me because I was abused when I was 6 months old, and I can't wrap my head around that. And for a mother to be doing it and taking pictures, it wasn't like I was burying my head in the sand or anything, because I think I did repost it for anybody that was interested, but only because I have gotten some really ugly mail that says mothers do not abuse their children, and I know that's not true.
No,
so,
it's not true at all. Sociopaths can be any gender.
Yeah,
child molesters can be any gender, but that just leaves our male children as bigger targets, because if a woman comes after a male child, it's some kind of like, oh, wow, look at you getting the older women. It's like some kind of wonderful thing, and it's like it's not wonderful. That child is molested. There's nothing wonderful or, you know, some sexual conquering kind of thing. It's a child being molested, plain and simple.
Right.
Well, I think as time goes on, we're going to find out that more boys are molested than we ever thought.
Society is not there yet to be able to accept that for what it is. We're still that male sexual drive. As long as you're sleeping with something, it's a good thing. And that's just simply not true.
Look at your Penn State. And I'm not from the States, but I read
about
it.
Oh, no. Exactly.
I was so mad.
That's an embarrassing situation. I mean, you know, they were protesting because they fired that son of a bitch, not because he did what he did. You know, that's just ironic in my personal humble opinion.
Look at how long it took for people to know who actually molested the boys. They were so focused on the guy who told and didn't tell enough that they completely lost focus of this guy. And I
one article I saw, the numbers, it was 40 boys at one point. I don't know, God knows how many it's been, but
right.
I think
right.
it's sad that the guy who's going down in history is the guy who didn't tell enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for the school system. I'm pretty sure that he went and told, because I have turned people in. I used to teach math. And you would go in and you were told you'd turn it into the administration. Well, you go down a few days later and you say, oh, you know, I'm just wondering how so-and-so is and, you know, what happened. And they'll tell you, it's a privacy issue. We can't discuss it with you. And that's the end of the story
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
The school administrators take that over. And what do you do?
Well, guess what? Out here on the reserve, you can't report another family member. It's hearsay. Is that crazy or what?
What?
Oh, no.
You can't report another family member.
The victim,
really?
The victim herself cannot, yeah. is not allowed to report a family member.
Well, no.
Can't they report it to a tribal member?
That's just it. Social services is on this reserve. And when I phoned in one time to report an incident within this family after court was over, I found out something else was going on within the family. And they said it was hearsay. And I'm like, what? I live here.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
they didn't want to hear about it. It's gossip.
Or in other words,
it's gossip. I could not believe it.
So if you're reporting on behalf of a child in your family, then it's hearsay, even if you know about it, maybe have even seen it or been told. That's what their law is telling you, right, Barry?
Yeah, yeah, because my daughter was told that from her cousin, and then I went to report, and they said, no, I couldn't. They couldn't do nothing about it.
That's ridiculous.
That whole system is so broke, though, and we don't have any concept as a society of how to really protect children.
Exactly. And that's how we end that Little Warriors is about the telling people that the perpetrators are in your family. They're not strangers.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, Jerry.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
What?
I can wait.
No, go ahead.
Well, she talked about going. Yeah. Terry talked about going to that, I'm sorry, and the name has just gone flat out of my head, but the school that you went to?
Indian Residential?
I have a lot of people who are on my page, and I know who are listening to this, who don't know anything about that, and I know a little bit about it, but would you mind talking about that? Would that be okay with you guys? She talked about that for a minute. Because I think it's important for people to understand where you came from.
What do you mean?
The residential schools, what are they?
Indian residential schools are boarding schools. Like for me, my parents moved off the reserve, then we moved into Calgary. And so Indian Affairs told my mom and dad that they should put us in boarding school. So they took us and shipped us to a boarding school, and we stayed there for a full year. When I left, the boarding school shut down there. But other people stayed there like years and years and years.
Yeah, they were horrible places. All across
and
Canada,
so they were run by nuns and priests, and they sexual abused the kids, and then the kids went on to act out as well, right?
Yes.
And then eventually Canada settled into a lawsuit, and they ended up paying these Indian residential school survivors. Like if you're in there for 1 year, you got $10,000, and my cousins in Saskatchewan call it a joke, and they would phone me and say, so did you get your shut up, touch me, feel me, shut up money? Mm-hmm. And I was really offended by it, and I'm like, oh my God, you guys are sick. They weren't sent to one because they were already shut down. I was in Alberta when that happened. I was also, four Cree girls were sent to an all Blackfoot boarding school, and they all spoke Blackfoot, and we were like, looked like white girls put in with, we weren't, I'm fair, I'm, you can tell I'm Native, but my sisters look more white, so boy, were we set into, it was like, it was pretty rough in there.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't realize
and
they
were
had
all
in Canada.
Up. We were all split up. I didn't see my sisters. I saw them in the food line, and then I got to see them at Christmas. But I would only see them at passing, yeah. And my sleeping quarters were away from them.
Yeah, part of what the school did is broke down the family unit and the community unit. So that's the reason you literally were not allowed to speak to your siblings or.
Yeah, and they cut our hair, and we had to pray, and they didn't feed us much.
Yeah, it was a very brutal, brutal place. Medical testing, all kind of stuff that they've done. So it's just, but the settlement was in 2008 is when the apology was, and then
mm-hmm.
the settlement process and all the things that's come from it began. And it's still a struggle to get your truth out. I mean, those apologies that they issue are just hush money a lot of times to get them out of legal responsibility.
Yeah.
Did they ever actually
just
want to
get you there and out?
What?
Pardon me?
Oh, did they ever actually even pay it?
Yeah. Yeah, I went through mine already. I mean, people over here have been, it started about 3 years ago. And mine has been the lowest settlement to date in Canada, period. And it was really weird because when I went in there, I'm telling them, like, I know who my perpetrator is. And I'm telling them, and then my lawyer takes me outside and she goes, don't tell them you know who your perpetrator is. I'm like, why?
Why?
And again, another damn secret. I'm like, and I know who it is. She goes, if you tell them, it's going to take a long time for you to settle. I'll tell you that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, my God.
Because a lot of times they get people to sign waivers saying that they won't speak to it, confidentiality agreements.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing was based on the Indian Act, I believe, where they – by law, you had no choice. You had to take your children and put them in these schools. You didn't have a choice.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just endless amounts of children in this world who's been seriously harmed by church-run schools and a lot of different-run schools.
Yeah, these perpetrators are absolutely ridiculous. This goes back to the point that sparked this whole show. Don't give the name of your perpetrator because it's going to take a long time to settle. And you know what they're essentially doing is protecting the identity of a perpetrator of a crime, and the who had to endure the crime and the crimes and the abuse is left, you know, twiddling her thumbs. I mean, this is absolute. Unadulterated, unmitigated bullshit. Pardon my French, ladies, but
I like you said that, David.
It's complete bullshit.
Yeah, thank you. I try to be as eloquent as possible.
That was eloquent. But the thing is that when people come from such severe abuse, it doesn't take a lot of tipping point to push them into the suicidal thoughts and the world of drugs and all that. So the last thing they need when they're pulling with all they have to overcome it is some stupid ass just making random comments that they don't even realize gut kicked that person right into a spiral. You know, like even when I was listening to you, Annie, and you were saying what she said to you, that thought went in your head, and you carried it with you, twisting it around and having to battle it. And she has no clue, and people don't, that just one sentence for a survivor can send a spiral.
Well, she did, because I went back and asked her.
You
are
adorable.
Whether she told me the truth, whether she told me the truth about how she felt or not, I did take it to her. You know.
Yeah.
And I have to take whatever she said and leave it at that. But
and just some people just have there's some knowledge that you can only have when you've been exposed to a high level of abuse that people who haven't lived it just don't even can't even comprehend what that's like. You know, they just don't they don't know what it looks like. And it scares them. They don't have that emotional depth to be able to process what that would mean to a child. They just want to stick their head in the sand, and in doing so, they allow y'all to continue to be victimized by their unwillingness to accept the truth.
Well, I think that's sad. I think it's sad that we raise people and that people, I see it as a weakness that they can't listen.
Exactly. So what do when you see that people like hear your story, what is it what's the signs where you know, oh God, here it goes, they're not gonna be able to handle it? What is it you start seeing that tells you they're not gonna get it?
Are you talking about me with my book?
Yeah. Or just in general when people know your truth.
You know, it's really weird what has happened to me. I've actually found it to be a little weird. People want to touch me.
Really?
And, but I think that I've done a really good job. I mean, to toot my own horn, but I think I've done a pretty fair job of saying this is what it felt like to be 6 years old and raped. This is what it felt like to me. And I think it took me a while to understand that. And some talking, obviously, to understand that, you know, they're wanting to touch me. They're wanting to hug me. It's not me. They're wanting to hug that little kid. But now I'm grown up. I represent something that's safe. They can't go find some kid that's being abused and do that because it's too risky. But I've had one person, after she read the first one, this was interesting. She said, I don't think I can read book two. She says, I love you, but this is really hard stuff. And I said, you know, well, that's okay, you know, whatever. And about 6 months later, she called me. She said, I read part two. So she just kind of needed to take a breath. I was prepared for a lot of negative stuff, but I've heard from people who were not abused who read it and have said, matter of fact, one lady wrote and said, her husband had been abused, and she could never understand. She read my book, and she says, now I get it. I get why he's the way he is. And that, you know, that made it all worthwhile, just hearing something like that.
Absolutely.
I'm not even answering your question, but that's been my experience.
You're most definitely answering it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there are many societies where a person with certain illnesses, like in many societies, lepers have their own colonies. They are not allowed to be a part of what they call normal or regular society. As a matter of fact, I'm a transplant patient, and I received a kidney and a pancreas. I had diabetes. I was born with juvenile type 1 diabetes. And it is really interesting how when I was growing up in school, when other kids found out I was a diabetic, it was almost like, oh, my God, we had an untouchable here. There's just something about being different that makes people not want to approach you. I mean, obviously, Annie, you've been through some interesting experiences. Oh, I want to hug you, you know, because you're such an amazing person. And frankly, Annie, you are an amazing person. And
I think they're looking to hug that little kid. I think that's what they're relating to.
But in a safer setting, like you said, because now you're an adult, and anybody who steps out of line, you can essentially kick their ass, which is a good thing. But The point I'm trying to make, though, is like what I've observed and what I've seen in my meanderings through life is when a person is a victim, whether it be a rape or physical abuse, emotional abuse, they are almost treated like lepers. Because anybody who hasn't experienced this, and ladies and gentlemen, please pay attention, because the victims are judged societally on established mores. This is normal. This is not normal. This is right. This is wrong. A black and white scenario with a lot of grays behind closed doors. So, you know, we listen to Terry's story. We listen to Annie's story. We listen to a lot of the stories from our brothers and sisters in Ireland or in England or here among the indigenous people. Terry and I, we're both indigenous people. We know what our people have been through, and it's like the mainstream. They don't see. They don't care. It say, well, you know what? You're an untouchable. You have a condition we don't want to deal with. It's a judgmental status that is established to make us feel like outsiders. But you know what, ladies and gentlemen? We're human beings. We're human. You know, and my heart goes out to anybody who's been through this kind of hell. And I have with me on this show three extraordinary human beings. And it's a great honor to be here with each and every one of you. Just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, make that four extraordinary human beings.
Yes, exactly.
Well, really.
Thank you. Annie.
Yes?
My late sister niece had told me that before she passed away, she said, you know, Tara, like, because when she was going through counseling, she would always phone me from the streets, and she said, you know, people, when they hear my story, they always want to save me. Like I'm a little kid, like they can just fix me and get me better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. It's funny.
And for me, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, most of my life, I mean, I've had real issues with people, like, wanting to touch me. Mm-hmm. And because touching was not a good thing, obviously. And my father shared me with his friends. So, you know, that's not in the book, by the way. But there were a lot of men involved when I was growing up. And it's kind of funny because now I'm so used to being hugged that I just hug them back. And
wow.
I've turned into a first-class hugger. So maybe they did fix me a little bit.
Maybe.
Oh.
Do you know, as far as hugging, I have a different perspective on it because I think people are empathic healers. And I always, interesting when I'm upset where people touch, like between your shoulder blades and how much they pat or if they rub your arm and where they rub it. I find all that stuff so interesting because they're actually trying to heal me and they don't even realize it. But they're drawn to certain spots on your body that they feel are hurting. And they start patting it and rubbing it in circles and the deeper they rub and all that. So as they're doing that to me, I'm always so curious how much they're reading off of me. So I think that's part of it, that people just instinctively know how to heal people from emotional upset, but they don't they don't even know it.
Yeah.
There's some studies on that.
Well, people with good hearts and people with good intentions, I think, Mel, you have a very very good and powerful point. It is when the darkness rises. There are people who, let's face it, you know, when they touch, they do not have good intentions. And I think that the empathy, it works both ways. You know when somebody just wants to say, hey, here's a healing touch of friendship and love. And then you can also tell when somebody's out to touch you to further to further perpetuate the cycle of I'm a mink and you're a wounded critter and I'm going to sneak up under the snow and eat you. So I think that it works two ways. For many years, and this is something that I've never said on radio, for many years I was afraid to be touched, and I was always in the flight or fight or whichever way it goes, mode.
Me too.
I was terrified. And like Terry, it was both, you know, men and women. You know, when they would approach me, if I was armed and I was legally licensed to carry a firearm, I carried it with me all the time, and ready to take it out if I felt that I was being threatened or harassed. And it was really bad because I could not tell. I could not differentiate between a good intention or a bad intention for a number of years. That has gotten better. So I think, Nell, you have a very, very beautiful point there. And if somebody now approaches me and says, hey, you look like you're down, and puts his or her arm around my shoulder, I'd welcome it, knowing that the intention's good.
Yeah, it took me a lot of years to get to that. When I first got with my husband, his family were all huggers. I'm like, you got to hug hello and goodbye? Like, that's just too much hugging. Y'all just going to have to leave me alone. That's just too much. But I had learned over time to finally, like, all right, hug me then if you must, you know?
I learned to, I have an intuition. I can... This might sound a little off, but I can tell a good person from a bad person right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And my girls are the same thing. And I don't know if it probably comes with being a sexual abuse survivor.
You
get these instincts and you just know. You just know. And I'm usually right. And so when my daughter told me about what happened, then we started telling her that people didn't have to hug her. She didn't have to hug people. If she didn't want somebody to hug her, to use her voice and tell them, don't touch me. And when people would come to, like relatives would come to hug, they'd say, Tova, come hug me. I said, no, give her that choice. If Tova wants to hug you, she'll ask you, she'll let you. Ask her. So, and that's one of the things that I practice myself. I work in a school, and my kids are always trying to hug me, always. But if they come to me, that's okay because they want to hug me. But if I want to hug them, I always ask them, can I hug you? If they say no, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, high five. But usually they always want to hug me. But, you know, I always ask them, I give them that choice, do you want a hug? Because not everybody wants a hug.
And
we need to start teaching our children that.
Absolutely. When you said that, I remember my daughter when she was under 2 years old, and somebody came in, I don't remember who, but they just grabbed her up, and then she started crying, and they were all offended, going like, look at her all fussy and everything. I'm like, well, hell, you didn't ask her permission. She didn't even know that you were coming. Next thing, she's in your arms, and acting like she's the one that's doing something wrong because she's upset. Put her down and approach her right. And then you'll
good
get a different reaction.
I was like,
my God, we condition our children to desensitize themselves to these instincts that you're talking about, like go hug your grandmother, go kiss this, go kiss that person, go do this. And so you completely kill a child's instincts of, no, that's not right, that's not healthy. They don't have a choice. And then we victimize them, and they have nowhere to go.
You teach them that they have no choice.
Right, exactly.
You're taking their choice away.
Right.
I got to ask Terry.
And so then when my kid,
I wanted to ask you something. Because I never learned. I'm really good at picking up on moods. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's almost like a psychic ability to pick up on a bad mood, a good mood, or, you know, things like that. But I never learned to tell the difference between a good person and a bad person. And I mean to tell
you,
I'm 57 and I still don't know. Huh?
This sounds really weird, but it's when I look at their hands, I can tell too. There's something about a pedophile's hands, I kid you not. And yeah, I can just tell by looking at somebody, and it's not an aura that I'm seeing. It's a feeling that I'm getting right from that person. It's an energy.
Body language. Yeah, are you talking about body language?
And my kids are the same.
Please elaborate on that. When you're talking about the hands of a pedophile, elaborate.
There's something about their hands. They're fat and like stubby. There's a certain look to their hands. I'm not kidding.
No,
I
definitely believe, because I believe in all that you're speaking about like that, because I'm extremely sensitive to energy and different people in my space and all those kind of things.
Right,
Growing up,
I didn't like people touching me.
Mm-mm. I didn't.
And then when I got into my teen years and was getting taller and older, then I started speaking up for myself, like it was, except it was angry, like, get the fuck away from me, excuse my language. But those, you know, back, I'm not going to be truthful, you know, back in the day, yeah, that was my stance, and I was looked at as angry, and in school, Terry Gray Eyes is angry all the time. No, Terry Gray Eyes was, I was outspoken, and people didn't like it. People don't like you to be outspoken. Do you know what I mean?
No, they don't.
And after being bothered, I would just speak up for myself. If someone tried to touch me or stepped into my space, I let them know, hey, get away from me. Don't touch me. And so I didn't have boyfriends.
Well, you had to fight every inch for your space. And that's the thing.
Exactly.
You should have never had to fight for your space. Annie shouldn't have never had to fight for hers. Either.
Right.
I never dated. I group dated. You know, I never went anywhere alone. I got in a lot of fights. Somebody would look at me coming down the hall in high school, and I would just, meet me after school, I'm going to kick your ass. And I was all of 4 feet tall.
I did.
I was a nasty, mean. All that anger that I couldn't get rid of at home, I took to school.
There you
Absolutely.
Go.
So did I.
Yeah. When your feelings are held captive and your emotions are put in a cage, within the what is supposed to be the sanctuary of your home. I mean, look, I can relate. You know, my brothers and I, we were never ever allowed to express anger. We were never allowed to express outrage, and yet when we went outside, we let loose. And I think I was probably the worst of my siblings. I exhibited great anger all the time. And you know, and Annie, remind me never to look at you cross-eyed, okay, dear?
I don't even tell you. Well, I had brothers, and we were animals. When it came to stuff like that, all of us had anger issues. And we just, my father encouraged it. Matter of fact, if you came home and he found out you lost a fight, he would beat you blue. You were not allowed to lose a fight. And we were all like that. We were just those nasty kids.
Yep,
well, you have to fight. Like, I got kicked out of 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th grade for fighting. you know, so, but, I mean, all right, so I fought a little bit here and there. But it was them and not me. It was completely them.
The truth comes out.
Remind me never to look at you cross-eyed either, or you, Terry.
I would just close your eyes until this show was over, David, just to make sure.
They just shouldn't be looking at us like that.
I know. Why are you looking at us? Quit looking at us.
We say that at this distance where I'm talking on my phone and far away, because if I go, oops, I don't want to get hit. Now, you know, but going back to the theme, you know, it's like, there are survivors that are withdrawn, quiet, maybe sullen. They don't say anything. And society looks at them and says, wow, why is that person so unfriendly? Then you got the Terries, and you got the Annies, and you got the Nels, and you got the Little Eagles out there going, you know, get the fuck away from me. And they're wondering, well, why is he or she so angry? They just don't get it.
But they need to manifest itself both ways.
And you're so right, because, and I tell this to teachers and caregivers, ask your child if one of your students is acting out and doing something, ask them. There's a reason why that child is acting out, because let me tell you, at 7 years old, I questioned as I got older, if my teacher had only asked me what was going on, I could have been able to tell her my brother's bothering me. But
right.
I couldn't. And every day after school, it consumed me. The dread having to go home after school, knowing that he was going to be there, knowing that my mom had to go to work and left him to babysit.
Mm.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
But nobody asked me. Nobody took that.
And they don't ask the right questions, because when you're little,
they don't know.
You don't have a word
they don't.
For that. You don't know what they did. You just know that this thing
well,
is happening
in the
70s, to you.
Back in the
yeah.
70s, it wasn't even talked about, right? These
much.
Teachers
yeah.
weren't even trained in such things. I don't even think they talked about it,
mm-hmm.
much less.
Oh, God,
you know,
we were watching Leaving to Beaver, and I thought that was how people really lived. You know, these things didn't happen.
Well,
who talked about it?
Wow.
Exactly.
But I think even today, though, the kids that it's happening to, the young kids, I think they'd still be hard-pressed to explain themselves articulately. There's got to be a lot of trust built up, and somehow you have to ask the right question without leading them.
Right.
It's not an easy process at all.
They need to start in grade 3.
They have
three.
To trust you. I think if you can get the kids to trust you, they will tell you when they're
right.
ready.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right.
But then even when you do tell, what's in place that doesn't create even a much bigger issue, like what happened with Terry's daughter now? It's like, then what? You tell, and then what happens?
Well, I can
mm-hmm.
tell you, I just got in trouble at school. I used to have these blackout periods, and a simple call from the school saying something is seriously wrong with your kid. My father was so paranoid that I got beat when I got home from school, and it wasn't even for something I had done. It was because someone was questioning. So,
right.
you know, those kids just, you know, kids are very astute to that. I'm going to go home and pay for this.
Oh, yeah,
right.
definitely.
Exactly. Exactly.
And with you, it would have been with your life, as brutal as your father was.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I listen to the experiences that you awesome ladies have been through, and you know, I as of late a couple of times I watched a show called Bully Beatdown with a host named Mayhem, and this guy was the victim of bullies throughout his childhood, and he grew up, learned how to fight. Learned how to kick ass, and now we have a show where victims of bullying call in, they send a video saying this is what's going on, and boy, some of those videos are heart-wrenching, man. You know, you see black eyes, bruises, cuts perpetrated upon these poor guys and gals, but you know, by these big-ass bullies that think that they're God's gift to the world, and he would invite them, he would pay them to come on and challenge their what they call anime fighters, and I'll tell you what, I wish that in our day when we were younger, although we are still young, by the way, I just want you to know that. But I wish we would have had a bully beat down, you know, for all the shit we've been through. But you know, essentially, that's what we have here, though. We have a bully beat down, and on the show we have these extraordinary ladies and they're telling us what they've been through and what they've experienced after the fact of abuse and what and Terry, your daughter, and you know what, Mel and I and we got Russ in there whenever he can make it. Miss that boy, miss that brother. You know, we're the bully beat down artists. You know, we're watching. We're watching, and we're hearing the stories of these people, and they have a voice. And anybody out there, I want to repeat this. If you have been the victim of abuse, if you have experienced the perpetration of these crimes against your person, your spirit, your heart, and your mind, it is not your fault. Not your fault. So, you know, I just want to throw that out to you. And, you know, if there's anybody in the chat room, please feel free to write, and we'll continue the conversation. And once again, I want anybody just tuning in, we have Annie O'Sullivan, the author of Can You Hear Me Now and Can You Hear Me Now Part 2, and she's working on the third part of the trilogy, and it's going to be an extraordinary collection, and I want to get all three. And we have Terry Gray Eyes. She is one extraordinary warrior woman, a survivor as well, but she is a warrior. And we have with us also the co-host and producer of this show, Nell Cole. She is a fighter. So, welcome back. And let's continue.
You're hilarious, Dave. I love it.
Sometimes.
What I'd like to focus on is that feeling of making a person feel like a it. And I know that I've seen it happen many a times. I've loved people it's happened to. And nothing is more heartbreaking to me than when people turn people into its non-emotional targets to just be kicked about. And it sounds like both of you ladies have had that experience. So what I'd like to do as we move closer to wrapping up the show is I'd like for you to talk to people and tell them how you would like them to treat you and to view you. And if we could start with Terry. If Terry, are you comfortable answering that?
Yes.
You want the world to treat
you? Yes, I am.
Okay.
I want people to treat me as a survivor, not a victim. And if anything, like sharing my story to other people helped me. You know, my teacher ended up writing me and telling me that because you shared your story with other people, two ladies in the class ended up telling their story. And for years they suppressed that. And at 35, they were finally opening up to have the courage to talk about it, because if I could do it, so could they. And I just want to encourage people. If something has happened to you, let it out, because this anger, it consumes you. And it can make you physically sick. And that's what happened to me. But I got better. And ultimately, I'm an advocate against child sexual abuse. So it made me a better person. But it took me years to get to that thinking.
And it does.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
All
right. Annie, how do you want people to treat you?
Absolutely with what Terry said. I have to agree 100%. And also, I've been asked that question before, so I sort of feel like I got practice at it. But for me, and really for anybody, it's that something bad happened, it's not who I am.
Right.
You know, if your house burned down, that's a really bad thing, but you're not that doesn't define you. Actually, I posted one day, and I said, if you were in a car accident, you wouldn't be called a car wreck, and it wouldn't take over the rest of your life, and people would want to hear about it. You know, they'd want to know, what did you do? How did you get over it? Good for you. I don't, like, well, yeah, I do. I think that's how it should be. It's just, it should be something that happened and you're still okay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
That's a perfect analogy in my mind.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing people need to understand, when I look at the different survivors, when you faced that level of stuff in your life, it develops you spiritually and mentally in a level that most people are never pushed to. So instead of looking at what they don't have or the different things, look at the gifts that they have because of it. Because y'all two ladies are strong spirits in this world. And y'all are strong because y'all had to fight for every inch of what you have. And that makes you a very evolved human being. And those senses that y'all are talking about, you develop because of your survival skills as well. So you need to know somebody's mood so that you don't get killed just trying to eat dinner.
Yeah.
And seriously, like, and that's what was my father, because he was bipolar. I knew as soon as I came in the door to look at him, and within an instant I knew, all right, here we go. Or, okay, it's good. It's a nice, relaxing day. But you had to be constantly on alert because people switch. And especially when you're dealing with the level of people that both of you are dealing with, one minute these people are supposed to be good people, and the next minute they're, you know, murderers. So you better be in tune to what's going on if you want to make it through the night. So it's just, it's a horrible world where children have to have that level of survival skills, but I'm always amazed at what a little six-year-old child can do to survive. And the skills that they can come. I don't even know where those skills come from. Because the things that they survive are staggering. You know, where do they come from? It's, I don't know.
You're right. Because at six, I knew to hide outside and not come in until it was bedtime.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, you know, another point now is that, you see, we're talking about how people treat survivors, and even the word survivor has its limitations. I see you, Terry, and you, Annie, and all these brothers and sisters that have been through this stuff. I see you as warriors. You are warriors, and you're out there, and you're advocating for people. But you know, we're talking about people who look at the survivors, and it's almost like. The survivors become a taboo themselves. They become untouchable. And I need to remind people that you can look at a survivor and what they've been through and always keep in mind, my prayer is that no one have to experience this, but you never know when it can happen to you or happen to your child or happen to your grandchild. You never, ever know. So the important thing is to remember is that we all have compassion and understanding and a spirit of camaraderie and union to keep this stuff from happening to anyone.
Right. Right.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And watch your children because they're everywhere.
Watch
your children. People tell me all the time, you see them everywhere. I really do see them everywhere, but it's not because of my imagination. It's because they are everywhere. This world is saturated with pedophiles, and we need to accept that as a truth, because every time that we start questioning ourselves and going, oh, it's just me, and I'm just hypersensitive about it, then your child and your grandchild can be targeted in that time where you're questioning.
You have to be vigilant because they are expert hiders.
Yeah.
Yes.
And don't let any kind of job they have, any kind of titles, any religious, police, none of that doesn't make a crap about who's really in that body. You go by your gut, you watch them, you watch your child's reaction, you watch as they pull back. These little subtle cues that tell you that your child is reading that energy as negative for some reason, that's all the hell you need to know. You don't need to go deeper in that, except remove your child because instinctually something is going on. That's all you need to know. It's stand between right. you and your child and that person and say, back off. There's something
that's
about
right. And you know what, air, you need to err on the side of the kid.
Absolutely. And if somebody gets their feelings hurt, then that's on them, because everybody should want that child to feel safe. And anybody whose ego is like, well, why are they worried about me? There's nothing wrong with me. It's not about you. It's about I'm not risking my child's path in life on the possibility that you might or might not be. Because once you start that spiral of being exposed to an abuser, it trickles your entire life and every decision, who you marry, how you interact sexually, every piece of your life. And that's a huge-ass gamble to take with your child's quality of life.
It is. And I mean, I know I said this before, but I really think if your child does not want to go hug somebody or touch
Absolutely.
Them, you have to teach them that it's okay. They don't have to touch everybody that they see.
Right.
Exactly. You know, I certainly don't want to touch everybody I see.
Me either.
You know?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I hear. But, guys, I'm so happy both of y'all have been on and are speaking these truths, because it's something that just needs to get out there over and over again. These are beautiful spirits that were came in this life in a rough environment that was not created by them. It was not chosen by them. It was just lived by them. You know, so, poor children.
If anything I could, you know, to tell parents listening out there,
mm-hmm.
is to teach your children to say stop or no.
Yeah.
Give them a choice as soon as they can start talking.
And if they ever come to tell you what happened, for God's sakes, listen. I'm so thankful my mom listened.
Exactly. But the first words out of your mouth should be, I believe you, and to stay calm and it's not your fault.
Right.
And then praise them for telling you.
Exactly.
Right.
Because in
That's
that
right.
one moment, if you spin it the other way, you will break down all communication and they will never tell you the truth.
The way you react will break or make a child.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Right.
If you like, holy shit, oh my God, then they'll be scared to say any more.
Right.
They
will.
Absolutely.
And it's
Absolutely.
Not about you. It's about the child.
That's right.
Absolutely. Before anything, I know that Annie has she has a website, and I'd like for Annie to give her contact info where you can get more information on her books. Can You Hear Me Now and Can You Hear Me Now Too, and the upcoming book. I know she's been working very hard writing this. And I know, I think Terry also has some a website and some information, and I'd like to take this moment, take each one. Annie, please, could you share your contact information with our listeners, please?
Annie, are you still there? Wait.
Oh, we lost her.
Well, no, hold
okay.
on. Annie, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
There
okay.
you are. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got
okay.
kicked off for a minute.
Oh, okay, because I was like, all of a sudden you were on mute.
It.
I'm like, what happened? Okay.
Goodness.
All right.
Glad to have you back. We were just asking you to give us your contact information. We were just talking about your books and your upcoming work, which you've been working very hard on. Could you share your website with us, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My website is www.writersportal.org/can you hear me now. And that website's actually got a lot of information. There's a chapter from my book there, but the most important thing, the thing I'm most proud of on that website, is there's international and U.S. Contact numbers for anybody who needs to talk to anybody about child abuse issues. And I'm on Facebook under Annie O'Sullivan Annie O'Sullivan 2009 @yahoo.com. And you'll find you'll find me there.
Awesome. And how about you, Terry? Is there any contact information you have for our listeners, so they can have a place to go for some information or any other contact needs they might have? Did we lose Terry?
No, hold on, let me. We shouldn't have. Terry, you still there? Well, maybe we did because she's on my line, so I don't know how I could have lost her. But
right, there must be something about me to check this now.
I know, what is it? She is also on Facebook, so which is
okay,
the main contact
good.
Information. So,
is she under Terry Gray Eyes?
Actually, I already posted her information on your page.
Oh, good. Okay.
So you'll have all the information because I could definitely tell where I'd love for you two to get together because there's a lot of good that can come out of that. And
oh,
I love
to
put two strong fighters together. There's nothing that gives me a bigger grin than that. Like, all right,
I didn't realize that she was from Canada, and
mm-hmm.
part of my family, actually a large part of my family, is from Nova Scotia, and my great-great-grandmother was Blackfoot.
Oh, wow.
So
that's right.
I'm really interested in talking to her.
I bet you are. And then that's, and you should be able to get in contact with her with the information I sent you. And if not, just let me know, and I'll be happy to make sure you two get to know each other. Before we close, though, David, I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to share some beautiful music with us.
It would be a great honor, Nell. And once again, if Terry's out there listening, because we did lose your voice, my friend, but I want to thank Annie for being on the show. You are absolutely wonderful, lady. You are wonderful, and we'd love to have you back. And Terry, if you're out there listening to us, we'd love to have you back, too. You are one extraordinary human being as well. And Nell, you are fantastic as always. And I'm going to offer a song, and I hope and pray that it rises like smoke on behalf of the survivors of abuse at many levels and in many ways. I want to offer this song as a prayer of healing and a song of union for all peoples to come together to face the realities and to work together for a better tomorrow for our women, our children, our elders, and for all life on Mother Earth.
Bye.
Thank you so much, David. And thank everybody. Thank everybody for coming.
Night, Nell. Night, David.
Night, Annie.
Good night, Annie, and many blessings to you. Thank you for joining us this evening. Be blessed. Be good to one another. Walk in peace and walk in beauty. Love you guys. Toksha.
Keep